You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, folks, welcome back to the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I am your host, James Edwards, Saturday, July 27th, as I broadcast to you from afar on the Alabama Gulf Coast. Keith Alexander back up in Memphis, as you well know by now. And as always, we are going out also to the AM, FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We mentioned at the top of the show that while not being our sole focus tonight, as the Martin Zimmerman case was last week, that Detroit was going to be getting a lion's share of the attention this evening. The first hour, we covered a couple of other stories and some listener feedback. The last half of this hour, we are also going to cover a couple of other stories, non-Detroit related. But first, one more guest on Detroit tonight. And she is, I guess, making her first appearance, an informed source from behind enemy lines. And with that, I'm going to toss it over to Keith for a more proper and formal introduction. Keith, it's all yours.
Okay, we're trying to maintain the anonymity of this particular guest. She's one of our great, vast network of secret agents out there throughout the fruited plain, as Rush Limbaugh would say. Lives in a multicultural city with a majority black population or near majority black population. She has studied the issue of municipal decline in majority black cities quite extensively. She's read the literature, she's been on the internet, and she has some personal experience to share with us. I'd like to welcome Holly Berry to the Political Cesspool.
Well, first of all, I would like to say what a treat it was to listen to Paul Kersey tonight. This is the first time I have listened to an interview with him, and he has a new fan, and I'm tuned into his website, so I'm very grateful for that. Well, I think we should just start from the top, and as Keith Alexander says, we should start speaking truth to power. I'd like to note that Detroit is the first major third world city in the United States. It's the vanguard or the poster child of bad governance and fiscal mismanagement at the hands of empowered blacks. The perfect example of what happens when blacks take over a political structure or a corporate structure. This week I've been listening to the radio and reading the internet articles and the mainstream media with facts and figures about Detroit. I'm going to read a few of those off, but I think it's important to note before I read those that these are symptoms of the disease or cancer, if you will, of blacks taking over a political power structure. We'll just start from the top here. In 1960, the city of Detroit had the highest per capita income in the entire nation. At this point currently, there are 78,000 abandoned homes in the city. 47% of the residents of Detroit are functionally illiterate. Less than half of the residents over the age of 16 are working at this point. 40% of the streetlights don't work. Police solve less than 10% of the crimes that are committed in Detroit. And crime has gotten so bad that the police are telling people, enter Detroit at your own risk. No one wants to talk about the symptoms or the disease or the cancer of blacks taking over a power structure. We get all these reasons, which I'll go into a little later, of why things have gone wrong in Detroit. Well, there's really only one reason, and we're seeing all the symptoms of that reason, which is empowered blacks is the main reason.
Well, James, I'm going to toss it over to you, buddy. I'll let you take a swing at this pinata.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, liberals like to debate in the abstract and the emotional. These are cold, hard facts. And, you know, again, we've arrived at a conclusion on this that points in a particular direction. And, of course, you know, it goes without saying what we believe that one of the major contributing factors to the demise of Detroit and Birmingham and Chicago and other formerly first-world cities has been. But, you know, to hear Holly break down those facts is particularly startling. I mean, as bad as I knew Detroit to be, that even astonishes me in some regards. And you can debate any reason for why these occurrences have manifested themselves, except for the most obvious one. And again, I welcome people to disagree with us, but just don't dismiss us as Neanderthals for suggesting that there's a common thread here between third world nations and third world cities, and then the manifestation of the, as she so accurately put it, the first third world city in America, which Detroit has become, I think, you know, in a greater capacity than even some of the southern cities that are not far behind. But I think Detroit must have the lead. If you look at the statistics and you look at the demographics and you look at the absolute and total carnage that has wrought Detroit, I think if you had to point a finger to the most beleaguered and miserable city, the one that most reflects a derelict third world city in America, it has to be Detroit. And Holly, I appreciate you and thank you for bringing those facts to the audience's attention, because it really punctuates the dreariness and accentuates the obvious.
Right. Holly, what that really shows is that, unlike the tale that you'll be told by these white privileged preachers like Tim Wise or Jane Elliott, white people are not the cancer of human history. We are like the swallows returning to Capistrano every year. We're the harbingers of springtime, growth, and prosperity. And quite frankly, if non-white people really knew what was good for them, they would nurture white people like a hothouse flower in their communities. They would try to make sure they were comfortable. They would want them to thrive. They would want them to multiply, go forth, be fruitful, and multiply, because you never see black people worldwide prospering or living in a first world environment unless they're living in the vicinity of a large number of white people. Look throughout the world. Name me one large black first world nation. They're not to be found, even though Sub-Saharan Africa is the wealthiest continent in terms of mineral wealth, in terms of fertile soil, in terms of long growing season of any place on earth. The only time there has been prosperity in Sub-Saharan Africa is in those nations that were headed by whites, Rhodesia and South Africa. When whites turned over the reins of government to blacks, they started to become third world hellholes, just like has happened in Detroit.
Well, we got to take a break there, Keith. Don't ask for whom the music plays. It plays for us. And we'll be back with our special guest, Holly. One more final and fleeting segment on the misery that is Detroit, Michigan, and then on to a couple of other stories before time runs out tonight. Stay tuned.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com, or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211, and take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again, and, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com, or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
We fought We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center. Where heritage and responsibility instill character. Where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental. Where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, folks, we have one more segment here devoted to Detroit, the destruction of Detroit. And then Keith and I are going to wrap up the show with a couple of other stories that have come to my attention this week. I want to thank again Holly for being with us tonight. A rose has bloomed on the nationally syndicated airwaves of the Political Cesspool to hear a voice of femininity. It's a rare occurrence, and we appreciate it. And
what do they say, James? A rose between two thorns, right?
You got that right, my friend. And Keith, this is a rose that you brought into the TPC greenhouse tonight, and I appreciate what she's brought forth this evening to this point. And we've got one more segment with her, and with that, I toss it back over to you.
Well, James, I have a few articles that are from the mainstream media discussing the problems in Detroit, and I'd like to read those. One tonight from the Globe and Mail, which is based in Toronto, Canada. They think they are the most authoritative news in Canada. And one from Paul Krugman. So we're going to start with the Globe and Mail article. These are the reasons that they offer up that Detroit is in the position that it's in. They say it's due to middle-class flight, bad urban planning, corruption, mismanagement, and a social safety net breakdown. What they don't discuss is that's at the hands of empowered black leaders. They're the ones that have caused middle-class flight. They're the ones that have caused bad urban planning. They're the ones that have corruption, mismanagement, and the social safety net breakdown. Keith talks about the parasite-host relationship, and this just occurred to me while we were doing this show. I think Detroit might be the only city where the hosts have left and the parasites remain, and they're an example of, you know, this is what the parasites have done. They haven't yet moved down to find another host. But like,
and of course, that can't sustain itself for much longer. I mean, it's just about all been eaten.
We spoke earlier in the radio program about how they'll probably start busing them or moving them to other cities. You know, now that they're in bankruptcy, what are we going to do now? Well, let's move them to other cities so they can have the same problems Detroit has.
Well, that does seem to be the constant in all of this. Andrew Young, who was the former UN ambassador from the United States and also the mayor of Atlanta, told white people in Fulton County that had moved out of Atlanta, said, "You can run, but you can't hide. We're going to follow you wherever you may go," just like the song that James likes that he plays from time to time on the cesspool. Who is it that sang that song, James?
All right, give me a clue.
"I will follow you. I will follow you wherever you may go." What is that song?
That was a Motown song.
How ironic.
Exactly. But that's a great song. I don't know if that was Mary Wells or I don't think it was the Supreme. You know, I'll give credit where credit is due, like any used car dealership, Keith, as you so often point out. You know, Motown had a lot of good singers.
I know, but, you know, they're going to follow us, just like Holly said, wherever we go. And that they, because they can't come to terms with the fact that they cannot sustain a first world community, even when it's handed to them on a silver platter, as it was in Detroit. Holly, what say you?
Oh, I agree. I'm just thinking about this Paul Krugman article I want to get to before our next break. It's the biggest load of baloney I think I've ever read. The title is called A Tale of Two Rust Belt Cities, and I guess he names his blog The Conscience of a Liberal. And at the end, this was what he summed up. Quote, "If you like, sprawl killed Detroit by depriving it of the kind of environment that incubate new sources of prosperity."
Other words, new white people, new dogs.
Correct.
For the fleas to jump on.
You know, he expects, the white man to provide the jobs, to provide the prosperity. But the whites gave over the city in 1974, and the blacks were all too happy to take over, and this is what they've done with it. You know, they were empowered, they wanted to have it their way. Now they have it their way, and now they're crying and want to be bailed out by the federal government.
What's that old saying, Holly, be careful what you wish for, your dream may come true?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what happened to the blacks of Detroit and is happening to majority black-run cities everywhere in the nation. We've got Gary, Indiana, Camden, New Jersey, Oakland, California, Birmingham, Alabama, Atlanta, Georgia. Memphis is probably not too far behind them. East St. Louis, Illinois. It's the same pattern. Nobody seems to be willing to own up to the obvious reality here, which is that black people cannot sustain a first world city that's handed to them on a silver platter. They will turn it into Detroit. They will turn it into Haiti. They will turn it into Zimbabwe. That's all over the world, folks. It's not localized to America. This is a racial dynamic involved here, not a national, not an economic, not a public policy dynamic. This is race realism 101.
You know, Keith, to quote Paul Kersey, he says, "Wherever you find black people in the absence of whiteness, civilization is going to pieces."
Well, you know, somebody tell us where we're wrong on that. Point us to this black thriving metropolis where black people have taken over and things have gotten better. As I've said before, I've never known a neighborhood that went transitioned from white to black and got better for it. And, you know, I'll toss down the gauntlet again. Show me the city where that's happened, where a city transitioned from majority white to majority non-white and became a better place.
Keith, I laugh because, you know, history is always being rewritten. Tongue twister there for me. History is always being rewritten. You know, they would, of course, first say that Egypt, ancient Egypt, was a black-run civilization. And now, leave it to the fundamentalist Christians. And, of course, this is a Christian show, so I'm not bashing. We're all Christians. We all accept Christ as our Savior, at least the hosting staff here. But, you know, I go into the Christian bookstore, and I see the Vacation Bible School kit that deals with ancient Greece, and it has Paul going to Greece to speak to all the black Greeks and spread the gospel to the Greeks who were black, according to this Vacation Bible School kit. So just give it a little while, and they will say that ancient Greece was a black-run civilization, and no one will be none the wiser.
No, you know, these people would lie when the truth sounds better. They'd climb on the roof to tell a lie when rather than stand on the ground and tell the truth, James. It's absolutely incredible that they get away with this, and it shows you how the public schools have succeeded in making the American public as dumb as a post.
Well, the public schools are one thing, and then the Christian bookstore around the corner from my house is another. But if you go by them, Paul went and spoke to all the blacks wearing togas and the wreath hat, crest on their heads, and that's how it was. So, you know, give it a few years, and there will be successful black civilizations, and Greek will be the first among the list. but that's neither here nor there. We're still dealing with reality. Reality is what reality is. And Holly, I want to thank you again for coming on with us tonight. I know time is running out. We have just a few segments or seconds remaining in this segment. Final word from you that you'd like to work in.
Oh, I'd just like to close and say that race is very real. Detroit in 2013 is an outward expression of this reality, and we need to be truth seekers and listen to the mainstream media.
Absolutely. We've got to speak truth to power, and unfortunately, power sure don't want to hear it.
And that being said, Holly, we appreciate your time this evening and for coming on with us and adding a new voice to the cesspool, and we hope that this is the first of many return engagements for you.
Thank you so much, James.
Thank
Ladies
you.
And gentlemen, still a couple of segments forthcoming, and we're going to shift gears. We're going to move out of Detroit for the first time in an hour and a half. A couple of other stories before the time runs out this evening. Stay tuned, folks.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend.
All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back. And I'm going to quarterback now how the rest of the show is going to go. Keith, I know you have a couple of fleeting and parting shots for the two guests this evening, that being Paul Kersey and, of course, Holly, who had just called in. Still excited about Colin Flaherty, who we're going to get back on, who we're going to get on the show for the first time in a week in the very near future. That's going to be another big interview. I tell you, the political cesspool is cresting right now.
I tell you what, we're hitting the zenith.
Let's hope not. Let's hope we never reach a zenith. Let's hope we are on a constant and steady ascension as far as it can possibly go. If you reach the zenith, that means you come down shortly thereafter. And we never want to come down. We always want to be building.
We're leaving the solar system then, okay?
You got it. But let me tell you, Keith, I'm down here in Alabama, and I was just going to say, my wife is hungry. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do this last segment with you here now, and I'm going to let you have the final segment of the show, which will be the one coming up right after the next commercial break, all to yourself to kind of recap the entire program. And I've made her wait, I believe, long enough. This is live radio. We're also real people, and real people get hungry, and she's been waiting patiently.
Is she gnawing on your leg or something?
Well, it's something like that, yes. So it's nearly 9 o'clock down here, and dinner time is normally earlier, but I'm punching a little extra. I had originally intended maybe for you to take the entire third hour upon yourself, but I'm having so much fun. It's so hard for me to let go. After 1,000 broadcasts, you think you could check out an hour early, but it's so hard for me because I enjoy my work and working with you, Keith, so much. But I do want to cover two quick stories this segment, if we can, and then I'll leave it to you for a summation solo during the last segment.
Gotcha.
Here in just a moment or two. Okay, will that work for you?
It'll work.
All right, here we go. Number one, one of your this man followed in the steps of the great Keith Alexander, who is a graduate of the University of Ole Miss, the University of Mississippi. So, Keith, one of your contemporaries, Laquan, I never can pronounce these names correctly, these urban names. Maybe it's Laquan Treadwell. He did a tweet, which, for the uninitiated and me being among them, is a picture on Twitter. He's tweeting stacks of cash. Now, this is an impoverished,
inner city,
victimized urban youth. He's a high school senior, I guess. He's about to go and sign with Ole Miss to play college football. He might not can read, but God knows he can count because he counted all the $100 bills that he had in his hand. How would he get them? So, in addition to allegedly having monthly KKK rallies, which is what one of the most recent Ole Miss football recruits had to say about the campus, that they have monthly, mind you, KKK rallies, which is completely fabricated.
That infrequent?
Ole Miss now faces a much more likely charge. And again, this is Keith Alexander's alma mater. Here's the story. Five-star wide receiver Laquan Treadwell, who committed to Ole Miss on January 17th, was in Oxford last weekend for a tour of the football facilities. The next time he finds himself on campus, Treadwell might have to drop by the school's compliance office. Treadwell posted a since-deleted photo on his Twitter account of what we presume are his hands atop a stack of $100 bills. That's certainly what it looked like. We have the picture available for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Naturally, it gave plenty of Ole Miss critics ammunition in their suspension of how Hugh Freeze, who is the head football coach, one of my former teachers, believe it or not, at Briarcrest Christian School, Hugh Freeze was one of my former high school teachers in the 1990s before moving on to greener pastures as the head coach of Ole Miss football, how Hugh Freeze has been able to reel in such a great recruiting class.
Let me tell you, Laquan Treadwell, what do they say, there's no cure for stupid?
Yeah.
If he doesn't want to play college football and get a shot at the NFL, he's just done the one thing that can probably bring that to fruition for him. What it does, again, you know, Paul Kersey was talking about Michael Orr and the Blind Side. Of course, Hugh Free was all up in that, you know, up to his eyeballs, basically. He was Michael Orr's coach in high school. He rode Michael Orr's coattails to Ole Miss to become a coaching assistant to former Ole Miss head football coach Ed Orgeron. Then he went to a couple of other small stops. He went to Lambeth College, I think, or maybe it was Union University, a small college in Jackson, Tennessee. Then he went to Arkansas State for 1 year, had success, then went to Ole Miss. And he's supposed to be squeaky clean, a perfect example, just like the Tuies of the Blind Side movie and novel fame, of good fundamentalist Christian Southern folk admitting the sins of their forefathers and ancestors and making amends and doing their darndest to help these poor disadvantaged black kids. Forget the fact that all these poor disadvantaged black kids are oversized athletes with potential to play either Division I college ball or professional ball. They are definitely on God's side and, of course, would never do anything dishonest. Well, we're about to see whether or not that whole house of cards comes crashing down because of this latest story. Laquan apparently needs a brain transplant if he's telling the truth. And if he's not telling the truth, then he may be a plant, somebody that has been sent there by the folks at various and sundry competitor schools to Ole Miss to try to bring down the Ole Miss program. But quite frankly, they can bring down the whole of the SEC regarding football, and I won't shed a tear because, quite frankly, this is what they get. This is why Johnny Vaught left coaching when the school, when the league integrated, racially integrated its sports teams. So did Adolph Rupp, the basketball coaching legend at Kentucky. They knew what recruiting black athletes would lead to, just what electing a black mayor led to in Detroit, massive corruption. And, you know, going out there and seeing these people with names that you can't pronounce playing for your alma mater and then doing embarrassing things like getting arrested for holding up convenience stores like happened in Tennessee at the University of Tennessee over the past several years, or this fellow, you know, making it rain on Facebook, showing all the Benjamins that he got from some supposedly misguided booster to attend Ole Miss. Let me tell you, it's time to fold the whole thing.
Well, I mean, this is a guy, a 17-year-old that's holding more $100 bills in his hand than I've ever held. And this is, you know, another, I mean, where did he get the money? And so he doesn't come from a family of wealth. So anyway.
Well, he could have got it from drug dealing, which is the other way that they can get it. But on the other hand, this will be an interesting one to keep tabs on.
All right, Keith, I got one more story for you, and then I'm going to leave it to you to digest it and then sum it all up in the third hour, or the last segment of the third hour. Ivy League professor claims that God is a white racist. This is a professor from the University of Pennsylvania. God is a white racist, that's what she says. And you have to go to the Ivy League to find this level of stupidity. But here's the story. An Ivy League professor blogged after George Zimmerman was acquitted that the verdict shows that God is a white racist who stalks young black men. Now, we've been accused of a lot of things, but if that's not racially inflammatory, then there is no such thing. And Thea Butler, who is an associate professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Department of Religious Studies, made the comment on Monday, God ain't good all the time. In fact, God is not for us, meaning black people. As a black woman in a nation that has taken too many pains to remind me that I'm not a white man and not capable of taking care of my reproductive rights or my voting rights, I know that this American God ain't my God. This is, again, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania and Ivy League School. As a matter of fact, she continues, God is a white racist with a problem. More importantly, he's carrying a gun and stalking young black men. As a historian of religion, I know that the Trayvon Martin moment is just one moment in the history of racism in America that in large part has its underpinnings in Christianity. Okay, Keith, I mean, can you get any more you know, that right there in about three sentences, she has been more inflammatory, more sensational, more racist, more bigoted than we've been in 10 years of broadcasting, and we get all of the arrows and spears. That is just completely ignorant, completely devoid of fact. And she is a professor of religion at an Ivy League school, and she says that Christians are the biggest race. I mean, it continues; it gets worse from there. But this is a professor of religion at an Ivy League school, and this is the best she can come up with.
Well, you know what it shows, James? It gives a lie to all of these so-called fundamentalist preachers and other preachers, Protestant mainline preachers, Roman Catholic priests like Father Flager, who tell you that you can't be a good Christian and have a strong sense of racial identity.
And Keith, I got to say this before I go. She is a regular contributor for MSNBC and CNN. A regular contributor for MSNBC and CNN, and I was told in my appearances that my comments were unfit for national television. Go watch my appearances on CNN, folks. See if I said anything inflammatory at all. All right, but compared to that...
I'll make a comment on the other side, James.
You got it, Keith. It's all yours. Take us into the home stretch, brother. Love
we'll,
you.
We'll
God
do
bless
it.
Y'all. I'll talk to you next week. But
ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. That number again, 801-216-4816.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, folks, since James has left me here like an orphan, like the redheaded stepchild at the family reunion here in the studio, I'm going to take some calls from people that have been waiting patiently for quite some time with comments about our show tonight. I think we have the first one up is Gary from Montana. Fire away, my friend.
Hi, Keith. I've enjoyed the show. I'm from Northwest Montana. I've got just a little bit of a dialogue and then a question, I guess.
Okay.
Northwest Montana, and 54 years, I haven't probably spoken an hour to a black person, but I live on a reservation, and so I guess the question is, I think there's parallels. Here in your show, I can see distinct parallels, and in my view, it boils down to the Federal Reserve and the fiat money system, LBJ's Great Society, and I don't necessarily blame the natives roundabout for their plight, which I would guess is similar to the inner city Detroit situation. But I do believe it's, you know, the small tribe of sociopaths that runs the Fed and Treasury Department and global finance for the last centuries. So I guess that's my question. How would, or your point of view regarding that?
Well, let me just say this. I take the position that liberalism is all of one piece. You can't support part of liberalism and decry another part. You can't say, for example, the civil rights movement was good, but homosexual rights is bad, or radical feminism is bad, or criminal rights is bad, or whatever. Environmentalism is good, but yada, yada, yada. You can't do that. And the reason is, it's all of one piece, and it all has the same destructive purpose. Now, I will agree with you to this extent. I think that the end game for all radical egalitarian liberal movements is globalism. The reason, right, for example, we have open borders, both under Republicans and Democrats, is that the Republicans and Democrats are all secretly globalists, the leaders are, and they want our white nations filled with third worlders who have no allegiance, for example, to the United States of America. They let the nearest group of third worlders, Hispanics, flood us, okay? Then, in Europe, for example, in England, they let the nearest group of third worlders, Muslims, come in to flood them. Why? They want the nation filled with people that have no allegiance whatsoever to the nation of England or the nation of the United States of America, because that will ease the transition into global government. What are the ends of global government? To do away with the middle class and to concentrate power in a small elite and reduce the rest of us to peon status. I remember explicitly back in the 50s when I was a child hearing people from the John Birch Society say, "Beware the one-worlders who think there's no reason why Americans should live any better than Ecuadorians." I thought that was a bunch of rubbish back then. I can tell now that the geeks had a point in the John Birch Society. That's exactly what I think it's all trending to. Thank you so much for your call. Okay, have we got another one, Sam? We've got an open line here at 866-966-NEWS. 986-NEWS. Okay, now, let's get back to the show. And first of all, James's last comment, parting shot on the professor from the University of Pennsylvania. Take a look at her. When I was a child, I went to England in the 50s, and they had what they called gollywog dolls. This particular professor looked exactly like an English gollywog doll from the 50s and 60s. This person apparently is knocking down a big salary, has one of the most prestigious teaching jobs in America, and I mean, she doesn't seem to have a room temperature IQ. She makes comments like this because apparently she can get away with them, and it doesn't take any real intelligence to make these type of comments. She is not, you know, why in the world would people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to sit at the foot of this learned savant for 4 years? Why are people going to tell the Ivy League emperor that he has no clothes, that basically these schools are, you know, no better than kindergartens? They have idiots on the faculty. Why would somebody want to pay to be exposed to idiocy like this for 4 years? That's my comment on that. Now to get back to our show and what happened in our show tonight. I think we had two excellent guests, both basically banging the same gong that it's race stupid. You know, James Carville was famous that he was a Democratic campaign strategist in Bill Clinton's campaign in 1992 against the horrendous George H.W. Bush, transplanted New England Yankee who tried to sail under the flag of being a red state Texan. Never fooled me. I don't think it fooled a lot of people. But what Carville said was, it's the economy, stupid. Well, what Holly and Paul Kersey are saying is, it's race, stupid. Race is the important fault line in human society. Leon Trotsky realized it. Theodore Adorno, Max Horkheimer, Antonio Gramsci, and the rest of the cultural Marxists realized it. They're hiding the ball from you. This is what is really important. And to the extent that white people cede power to non-white people in terms of running the culture, running the government, running whatever, running a corporation, as Holly said, what you're going to see is a decline and ultimately a fall, because they cannot maintain first world institutions of government, of business, or anything else. They are fortunate to be here and to share in a first world economy because they are in the midst of a lot of white people. Now, if you want to destroy prosperity in America, if you want to turn America into a third world nation, do exactly what our federal government is doing, trying to diminish the white population and to increase the non-white population. We see what has happened historically with this plan. Haiti was once the most prosperous colony in the New World. It was called the Jewel of the Caribbean. Then in the late 18th and early 19th century, Toussaint Louverture led a slave rebellion in which the white people were either driven out or killed. Not only were white people killed, mulattoes were killed. And ever since that, Haiti has been synonymous with disease, ignorance, barbarity, and disease. It, quite frankly, exists today solely on the basis of foreign aid. If it were not for foreign aid coming in from primarily white nations in the world, they'd be starving to death in Haiti. The former fertile soil of Haiti has now been depleted to the extent that it doesn't grow crops, the people can't grow crops, they apparently lack the ability, and the place is the hellhole of the Western Hemisphere, okay? It's Detroit, a precursor of Detroit. Then look at what happened to Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, white-run Rhodesia. It was under white rule called the breadbasket of Africa. Today, it's Zimbabwe, the basket case of Africa. The only exports they have are from about 300 white-owned farms that have stayed the course and are trying to exist, but the government is busily trying to pressure those people out of the nation so that they can distribute their land to political cronies of the current leader of Zimbabwe. And, of course, whenever this happens, the farm stops being productive. And South Africa right now, Genocide Watch, which is a liberal organization, has officially said that the government of South Africa is conducting genocide against white rural farmers in that nation. But the silence is deafening from our government and from every European government. They're not going to come to these people's aid. They will not offer them refugee status when they, among all the people in the world, deserve it probably more than any other group. That shows you the bias of liberalism. The bias of liberalism is not anti-conservative, it's anti-white. And people need to wake up and smell the coffee. What happened in Detroit, as Holly and Paul Kersey have said, is a canary in the coal mine. This is something that is going to happen as the demographics of America change, as UN demographers predict, over the next 20 or so, 25 years. By the year 2041, they move the prediction down from 2050, America will officially be a majority non-white nation. Whites will be below 50%. Now, if you think it was a close call in the past several weeks to get an obviously innocent man like George Zimmerman acquitted before a jury, even when that jury supposedly had like five white women on it out of six. What do you think is going to happen in the brave new world of 21st century America, folks?
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, it's crazy stuff, but let me tell you, it's what we have in our future unless we wake up and smell the coffee. We're, that dull roar you hear in the distance is Niagara Falls, and we're about to go over it in a barrel unless we start paddling like mad for shore right away, folks. We're going to leave it with you. Have a great week, and we look forward to hearing from you 6 days and 21 hours from now with the next installment of the Political Cesspool. Good night, everybody.